UK Wine Show, show number 132. David Paxton on McLaren Vale. On this week's award-winning wine show, we're talking with David Paxton on McLaren Vale, South Australia.
And in the news, Robert Parker gives New Zealand the thumbs up, Oz and James drink to Britain, and will Beaujolais be big in Japan this year?
G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 132 for the 21st of November 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show we're talking with David Paxton from Paxton Vineyards in McLaren Vale, South Australia. And in the spotlight, we've finished up on yeast, and we're going to be looking at where the flavours in wine come from in a bit more detail. And don't forget, in this week's quote, this quote is not a classic, or from a famous person, well, sort of, not a famous person, but it's a typical saying of this week's imaginary person. Red wine with fish? Well, that should have told me something. Clues throughout the show, answer at the end, but next up we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. The third Thursday in November traditionally marks the official uncorking of Beaujolais Nouveau around the world. And because of their time zone, the Japanese are the first in the world to get a taste. Japan is the biggest importer of Beaujolais Nouveau, but with its economy in recession and a strong euro making the wine more expensive, fewer Japanese are expected to celebrate its arrival this year. Although there will be promotional deals, the average price is likely to be around 3,000 yen, or about $30 a bottle. Japan's expected to import 6.4 million bottles this year, down 20% on 2007 and half the highest amount ever imported of 12.5 million bottles in 2004.
I must admit, the whole Beaujolais thing has missed me. I guess I must be a stick in the mud, especially when I start thinking about the environmental damage flying all that Beaujolais to Japan that must do. I suppose that's why it costs around 20 quid or $30. Apparently some of the wine is being bottled in PET, which should be interesting, but will significantly reduce the cost of air freight. What's next, Jane?
Something you'll be pleased about, Chris. In his latest edition of the Wine Buyer's Guide, wine critic Robert Parker has finally acknowledged New Zealand wineries by awarding 5-star ratings to 5 wineries and rating another 21 with 4 stars. Parker has singled out Tamata Estate, Atarangi, Felton Road, Pegasus Bay and Ripon as the 5 outstanding wine producers. But for the first 6 issues of his guide, America's controversial wine critic declined to comment on New Zealand wine. And so finally, the silence has been broken with the release of the 7th edition. Parker's team of wine writers grade wineries on their overall ability to deliver consistent excellence, even in mediocre or poor vintages. And only a very small number of wineries around the world achieve his highest rating of 5 stars or outstanding. In other words, it's the wine world's equivalent of 3 Michelin stars. Robert Parker's New Zealand correspondent Neil Martin will be returning to New Zealand in January to continue his appraisal of New Zealand.
Very interesting that Robert has selected 2 Otago producers, a Martinborough producer, Waipara and Napier, but not any Marlborough wine producers. All these producers are definitely top draw, but there are other wineries in New Zealand that are in the same camp. Part of his selection criteria appears to be based on small family wineries. So he's not only judging the wines and the quality of the wines, but he's also judging the shareholders. Robert's been pretty quiet on English wine, but not Oz and James. What's that all about, Jane?
Well, Oz Clark and Top Gear presenter James May will be back on our screens in January, this time on a tour of Britain in the 3rd series of Oz and James' Big Wine Adventure. But the programme will be called Oz and James Drink to Britain and will cover other drinks produced in the UK, not just wine. They're travelling around in the comfort of a vintage Rolls-Royce, believe it or not, with a caravan in tow. Don't forget you can get more information on our website at 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. It'll be interesting to see how much wine is included. The emphasis appears to be less on wine and more on beer, pims, gin and whiskey rather than the wine shows that Oz and James have been doing in the past. No matter how hard they look, though, they're unlikely to find any great reds coming out of England that they could recommend. Those reds that they do find are unlikely to go with fish. In this week's quote, our imaginary person is a character from a movie and a book, And he's just been surprised by a double agent and says, "Red wine with fish. Well, that should have told me something." Any ideas? One thing I have no idea about is the book review. I was due to do the book review this week in the spotlight, but to be honest, I didn't manage to finish the book in time. So Chateau Monty's review will have to wait until next week. This week, I want to explore the subject that's had quite a bit of argument in emails over the last couple of years. It's on the fruit development in grapes and the flavour in grapes. Many people talk about the sugar-acidity balance, probably because it's quick and easy to measure in vineyards. Normally I can speak with some confidence on these spotlights, but when I'm talking about flavour development within grapes, I'm on quite shaky ground. So I've referenced about 7 podcasts over the last 3 years, which we've talked about it, and I'm going to put a page up on our website, ukwineshow.co.uk, talking about this as well. It'll be called Wine Flavours. For me, the discussion about wine flavours started to make sense about show 117, when we spoke with Tim Finn. If you recall, he'd been putting shells under the vines to increase the UV exposure. In the interview with Tim, he said that he thought that adding UV light through shells changed the ratio of sugars to flavours. That's a bit opposite to what Richard Smart had said a couple of weeks earlier, where he had thought that the picking date was not very important. I have had a couple of emails from various people who think that Richard was a bit wrong here. Sadly, he can't defend his comments, but listening to Richard's show a couple of times, and more recently the show with Tim, and going back to some other shows with Sam and Simon Waghorn, I'd like to expand my understanding. Now, as I said earlier, I'm not saying that this is 100% right. I'm not a viticulturalist expert, but piecing together what other expert comments have said, I think we can come up with a solution that fits here. Simon Waghorn, if you recall way back in show 26, said that Sauvignon Blanc flavours change as it ripens, and you can taste those aromas in your mouth. Now, we normally can't taste what the wine will taste like from the grapes themselves, as the juice undergoes quite a significant series of chemical changes normally to create the final flavour in wine. However, Sauvignon Blanc is unique in that the chemical precursors that are required to make the flavours are in our saliva, so you can actually taste the final flavour of the wine by tasting the grapes. So from that, you can conclude that yes, the flavours in grapes do change as the grape ripens. No one disagrees that sugar increases and acidity decreases as grapes ripen as well. What Richard Smart took issue to was people coming into the vineyard and saying they can taste the wine in the grapes and determining picking time accordingly. Apart from Sauvignon Blanc, this is probably unlikely to be true. But for me, the question is twofold. Firstly, what sets the flavour profiles that your average grape goes through to maturity? Secondly, how fast do those flavours change between the minimum and maximum sugar levels that you'd have in wine, i.e. how much can flavour change depending on the pick date? I suspect that flavours for different grape varieties change by different amounts. Some such as Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough can change quite a bit, while other varieties don't change as much. So the next question is, what is driving the flavour changes? Tim Finn talked about slow ripening clones of Pinot Noir, losing those green notes with more UV light. And Richard Smart backed this up by talking about the exposure of grapes to light early on helps Cabernet Sauvignon lose those green flavours. So it appears that losing some flavours, particularly those green notes, is possible with more UV light. Mariella from Catena Zapata certainly believes that the extra UV light, with the higher altitudes you go, the thicker the skins and the more polyphenols that are generated. Now, polyphenols, if you recall, are a grouping of tannins, colour and flavours. Now, these changes in flavour are not necessarily changes in the flavours themselves, but might be a change in how quickly the flavour develops or decays. Interestingly, you may remember that Sam Harrop talked about the green nature of some South African wines. Here, according to Sam, the heat provides so much stress that impedes the flavour development in the vine, with that green nature of some wines coming through because of the heat inhibiting the flavour development. Way back in show 26, Simon Waghorn described the full flavour change in Sauvignon Blanc as the vine developed. He also indicated that the intensity of flavour was proportional to how long it took the vine to move from one flavour zone to the next. It raises an interesting point. How quickly does the flavour in the vine increase and decrease? And is there anything else apart from UV light that may change that rate of development? Another interesting thing about flavours and grapes is we talked to Joel Peterson back in show 40 and 41. Now, he talked about soils influencing the flavour of wine, not necessarily because what the soils have, perhaps a particular chemical, but perhaps what they lack, a chemical that the plant needs. This missing molecule means that the vines adapt, and perhaps the adaption results in changes in either size or flavour of the grapes. You can extend this as well. It's possible in some circumstances missing chemical is required perhaps during the fermentation process. And we know that yeasts can have a huge influence on the flavour development of the wine. So perhaps a fundamentally important element such as nitrogen, if that was in a low amount, it may create problems. Sam Harrop in show 107, 8 and 9 talked about the flavours developing due to problems in fermentation, and nitrogen is a key ingredient. For me, I found this quite interesting. I still haven't managed to work everything out, but it certainly looks like grapes do go through a series of flavours as they ripen, often a green flavour and then into more ripe flavours, and UV light does appear to be a key driver in shifting the plant along that flavour spectrum. Whether the grapes themselves develop different flavours due to different UV lights, I'm a little more sceptical about. I hope you find it interesting. Anyway, I do quite like these sciencey things, but we're going to have a break from all this sciencey type wine talk when I review Chateau Monty's book. Books are full of characters, and this week's quote is not from a real person, but was penned initially for a book and then later turned into a 1963 blockbuster movie. If you recall, we're talking about an English spy who's just been surprised by a double agent and quips, "Red wine with fish? Well, that should have told me something." While you think about who said that, next up we have the interview with David Paxton. David is the owner of Paxton Vineyards in McLaren Vale. Let's have a listen to what he has to say about McLaren Vale. Hi, I'm with David Paxton, owner of Paxton Vineyards in McLaren Vale.
Hi, Chris. McLaren Vale's just 40 kilometres south of Adelaide on the Fleurieu Peninsula in South Australia. It's actually constrained in a valley surrounded by the Adelaide Hills on one side, the Onkapringa River on another, and St Vincent's Gulf on the third side. And there are only three sides in this particular valley. St Vincent's Gulf is a warm body of water as it extends at least 230 kilometres into the South Australian outback. This therefore modifies the climate and gives us a what you would call a very maritime climate, which gives McLaren Vale a unique viticultural difference, because we make some, our specialty is fruit-driven red wines.
Fruit-driven red wines. GSM, I understand. Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre.
Indeed, they are the varieties that thrive there, and historically they've been the varieties that have done very well there. And we're going back into the before the last century, back in the 1800s. There was a period where everybody got a bit sick of them and tried growing everything else. Now we're back growing Verdra and Grenache Shiraz. The other variety that does particularly well there is Cabernet.
Yep.
Recently, the Cabernet from McLaren Vale has really won quite a lot of awards and recognition all over the world. So it's really a slightly multifaceted red wine growing area, but they are the three varieties that seem to excel. We of course grow whites, and we're somewhat in the shadow of the Adelaide Hills, although we are growing very interesting and increasingly recognised Chardonnays, and then there's a myriad of other white varieties, but Chardonnay and the reds are our main staple.
Fantastic. There's a bit of altitude in McLaren Vale as well. You're not exactly on the coast.
There is very little altitude. The Adelaide Hills around us rise up to about 300 metres only. At the top end of the valley, yes, that would probably be at 150 metres, perhaps, from sea level. The main part of it is about 40 or 50 metres above sea level.
I spoke to some people in Perry Estate, yeah.
Yeah, well, they could be well up in the... yeah, they've probably got some... I think they've got vineyards up in Blewett Springs, yeah, so they would be higher.
Okay, that's fine. GSM is Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, the three grapes. You've talked about Cabernet Sauvignon as well. Blending those three grapes, is it always done as a blend? Because, you know, Shiraz, you normally think of things like Barossa, whereas McLaren Vale, I always think of those three as a blend for some reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of people blend the three, and in our case, we blend just Grenache and Shiraz. But there is certainly... everybody has a straight Shiraz or two.
Yeah.
So, the main focus on McLaren Vale, even though Barossa has the name, one of the great focuses is on Shiraz. And our style is different to the Barossa, and it is a fruit-driven style.
Do you want to just fruit-driven style? Because Barossa is quite a heavy style of Shiraz, usually.
Yes, it is, and it's... our Shiraz, for example, have all sorts of bits and pieces in them, but, you know, they always have a little bit of chocolate and mulberry. So it's really, quite a flavoursome little mix. And we can grow big, heavy Shiraz as well, but we, as a district, are tending to steer away from that and go for a slightly more elegant style of winemaking.
Fantastic. Okay, then David, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Chris.
Quite a short interview this week on McLaren Vale, but it does produce some fantastic wines. Next week, we're going to be still exploring different regions of the world. We're off to Pendes, Cava country. That's the Spanish sparkling wine. We're going to be talking with Ana López-Lidden on Cava and Cremona. They're a small boutique cava producer that she works for. We discuss the two volatile topics in cava, the new grape varieties, and to dosage, along with what does cryogenics have to do with wine? But before we finish up, how are you going with that quote? Red wine with fish? Well, that should have told me something. Come on, let's face it. How many pretend English spies with such style are there to be able to judge a character by the poor food and wine matching? Of course... we're talking about James Bond from the movie From Russia with Love, 1963. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.